Theology.
Theology.
Unplugged.
The podcast culture is telling us something. It's an odd culture. I got into it back in 2005, believe it or not. At least that's when they started calling these podcasts. And that's when we started Theology Unplugged. I was very reluctant to go to the video mode of it until 2020. Podcast culture is doing so much. I mean, people are listening differently. They're trusting differently. We've got new authorities out there in this podcast world. And I'm going to tell you why these new authorities, why the door is open for these new authorities to be new authorities. And I'm not necessarily critiquing these individual new authorities that are out there. I hate to even give any names, but there's very popular long-form conversations going on across YouTube. And that's the primary place where people are going to learn is YouTube. I mean, I even spend most of my time learning on YouTube if I'm learning the new stuff. What's the new stuff out there? Well, I turn on my YouTube and try to figure it out. Most of the time, it comes in these long-form conversations from these guys that are very, very good and very curious. And they're asking the right questions. The problem is, as we listen to them and admire them, which I do, the problem is that they're not really biting down too hard on anything because there's so much being presented to them. And who could blame them? I mean, it's just whenever you have this many people coming on claiming to be the authorities, if you're humble enough, you're going to listen to this whole thing and say, gosh, what do I know? Why should I choose something here? Well, I'm going to tell you some reasons, at least whenever we're talking about Christianity, to choose Christianity and why Christianity has not only an argument to be made, but it is the argument because it comes from the truth. Keep on listening. I know that's a big claim. Just keep on listening. But authority has shifted from institutions to individuals. That's kind of the way it's moved. And who's to say that's necessarily wrong? Who's to say that one is better than the other? One is curated by people up top. Another is curated by you. And sometimes, you know, it's kind of like the music world. I think we had better music before we moved to this personal curation. But, you know, not everybody agrees with me. I liked the gatekeepers, even though they were gatekeepers, because at least they thought about what was good and what makes money and filtered through what stuff they felt due to their experience could really make it in mainstream. Now today, it's very hard to find that which is really good music. You can find it. It takes a long time, but the problem is, at that point, the culture of the music cannot be made. It cannot be had. Like, whenever we talk about older music, the reason why everybody can sing certain songs together and they know certain songs is because that was what everybody was listening to. And so we would know everybody would know it. And therefore, there was this kind of cultural excitement about things. Whenever you talk about the different generations, whenever I talk about the 80s and the 90s when I grew up, and anybody who talks about the 80s or 90s, they'll know exactly what I'm talking about whenever we have all kinds of movies or music or the kind of the way people thought back then was the same because it was curated by someone else. Is that good? Not necessarily, but at the same time, being today where it's not curated at all is not really producing this togetherness of a generation. I don't think you'll really be able to look back and see the generation as it is today the same way you used to. I'm not saying it's better or worse. I'm just saying mine's always better. I mean, my music is always better, and U2 is the best, so that's unfortunate that people don't know U2, even though they're going back to the 90s and the 80s. Oh, well, somebody knew I was going to go there. Okay, so not institutions, not credentialed authorities, yet people trust them. Why is that? That's the question. Now, we're living in the aftermath of scientism and modernism. Let me explain modernism first. Modernism is the period of human history where we had an enlightenment, an explosion of thinking, and it is characterized by our methodology of coming to know truth. In modernism, we kind of found mathematics and we found science and we said, since this is so reliable, since it is repeatable, since it is something that you have multiple experiences, different people saying the same thing about, different people do mathematics, doesn't matter where or when, the mathematics is always the same. Different people, whenever they do certain science is a method, and so if it's applied the same way, it should come out the same way, and we have this shared experience. And so again, that it was quite reliable, but it's beginning to crack. Modernism is beginning to crack. Scientism is this idea that I won't come to know anything, I won't come to learn anything unless it's scientific. The problem is with these, they begin to crack for lots of reasons, but one of the reasons they begin to crack is because they fall on their own authority. Scientism, whenever you say, I will not believe anything unless it is scientifically proven, you can't prove that. That itself, that very foundational statement, can't be proved. And also, whenever you're talking about modernism, you're talking about a lot of things that are produced out of this era and a lot of things that are manipulated within this era. And so now we're starting to see, well, gosh, it seems like we're being manipulated. It seems like all of the experts and all of the science and all of the medicine, they're telling us one thing, but in reality, it's something else. And so either we become scientists ourselves and mathematicians ourselves to be able to create our own modernistic worldview, which we can't because, as we'll see later on, we don't have all the data. We don't have all the information besides being smart enough individually to be able to pull off what generations of humanity could pull off together. But at the same time, we're seeing manipulation. We're seeing the human factor in all of this come in. And we're beginning to say, listen, I'm not really trusting it anymore. And I don't even know if my foundations for wanting to trust it are correct outside of some type of assumptions. Now, here's what's coming along. And here's what's breaking things. There's all kinds of things that are breaking things that have happened in the last 100 years, but especially in the last 20 years, ever since the internet came out, and ever since we've been able to see other sources of information immediately before they are curated. And we begin to see the world isn't quite the same way as maybe people have been presenting it to us. And as a matter of fact, you know, even if you're a good church-going Christian who lives in America, you begin to look at other things and oftentimes you're like, this isn't the same way my pastor puts it. Because why? Because pastors can manipulate as well. You begin to see, gosh, there's different versions of Christianity out there, and they all seem to love Jesus. They all seem to believe in God, but this one over here cannot be a true believer. Why? Because my pastor said that. Or we live in a community of a town or a community where a church is there, and everybody goes to the same church, and everybody kind of believes the same things, acts the same way, has been brought up under the same tutelage, and therefore talks the same way. And then you get to other places, and maybe they don't value quite so much your town's value or your church's value on this particular aspect of Christianity. Or maybe you begin to look across the world because the internet's here and you're saying, golly, we're here in our own town caring about ourselves whenever there's places all over the world that are in great need. And let's look at me frowning about little things that I don't get in this area. Or you see people that have problems just like you across the world. It's just changing. This world culture, it changes you. It causes you to be confused. It causes you to question the assumptions you had before, especially whenever you look across the world and you see other people that are supposed to be, because they're not like you, they're supposed to be evil and no good and going to hell. And you're like, I don't know. I don't know if that's true because they seem so this way now. I was told they were this way, but they seem so this way. They love their kids just as much as I love my kids. They take care of their community just like we take care of our community. Why is that? And if you haven't been taught these things, if you haven't been exposed to it by your church and the Christian worldview fit into the actual world, you're going to find that your little Christian world that you've created doesn't really answer all the questions, and many times answers some of them wrong. So you've got lots of things happening, but think of this stuff that's going on right now underneath our nose. Think of all this stuff that at least, once again, seems to be not curated through this institutional hierarchy, this institutional power, this institutional deep state, which everybody has a deep state that they talk about in every culture, in every country. But all of a sudden, you are able to see those people who did not have a voice, they have a voice now. And what do they say? What do you find out? You find out that everybody is seeing these things flying around in the sky. And finally, you have the culture itself come out and say, yeah, these things really do exist. Yes, we really demonize and make the people who said they saw these things look ridiculous before, but they're right. They've always actually been flying around. We don't know what they are. Now, do we know whether they're telling the truth? No. But at the same time, they're admitting something, and it seems like there are things flying around in the air. I've talked to people who say that they've seen these things flying around in the air that are not human planes, or at least anything that we know about. So there's all kinds of theories about that, but at the same time, we're just scratching our heads, and I think we've been accustomed to it for so long to being disappointed that our truth, our little worldview is not exactly all right. We do not have it perfectly down, and we're just kind of letting it go. Oh, you know, you say there's UFOs, huh? Oh, you say there's this new thing called UAPs, and they're underwater and in the air. We don't know what they are. We just say, okay, you know, we don't know. We don't know what to do with that. But at least we've become accustomed to being disappointed that our worldview is not all there is. But at the same point, many of us, like myself, I don't come at it disappointed. I come at it excited because all of this stuff fits into our worldview, as we'll see in just a little bit. If you have all of the right worldview questions and you've asked them and filtered your beliefs through them, then you'll come out on the other side with a more solid in your beliefs that were right and less solid in the ones that probably aren't right or may not be right or you just don't know. You kind of open yourself up in different ways. But I like this stuff. I like it that people are saying, yeah, there's UFOs. I'm like, okay, well, I don't think they're necessarily from other planets, but we can discuss that. We can talk about that. Because what you're doing is saying, we don't really have it all figured out. And I'm like, there you go. We don't have it all figured out. That's the great thing. But we do have some things figured out. And let me tell you about those things we do have figured out. But, you know, UFOs are out there. I remember whenever, I think it was in the 90s, whenever they released all of that stuff, Information Act, released all of these files, and we found out what the CIA had been doing in the background. And, you know, there's the stuff with JFK, and we don't know what's going on there. I'm not going to claim I do. I have my assumptions, but have that stuff. We have stuff that is with the Men in Black, which I guess there were really Men in Black, that if you saw a UFO in the 60s, they showed up at your front door and they dressed in black suits and wore black hats and told you, don't tell anybody about this or we'll ruin your life. But how do I know that? Because they finally released the files, and I doubt they released those files. I doubt they're leading us somewhere, but maybe they are. I don't know. I mean, it doesn't matter one way or another for my worldview. But at the same time, you've got that. And then you've got the CIA talking about how they did experiments back in the 70s, 80s, 90s. Probably doing them still today. But, you know, manipulating people's minds, manipulating their thoughts, manipulating their personality to have multiple personalities to where one personality would be ready to go in and be a spy for our nation, yet at the same time, the other personality would have information that this personality wouldn't have. And so if he were ever to get caught, then this personality wouldn't know what this personality knew. So that kind of thing. MK Ultra is what it's called. You can look it up. MK Ultra is confirmed now in history. At least they're admitting to it. But again, we don't even know what to believe. Whenever they admit to something, we don't know whether we believe that. But that's postmodernism. That's where we're at, moving into a postmodern world where there's so much information that we're either, many people are either letting go of everything or just grabbing on to what they already held to and holding on to it for dear life. And I don't think that we have to do either one of those. I think Christianity is the one worldview that assumes the fact that there's a lot of mystery and there's a lot that has been revealed to us. Matter of fact, said in the Old Testament, Christ, our God, told the Israelites, told God's people, hey, listen, the secret things belong to me, therefore are secret things, but the things revealed belong to you. You stay away from the secret things and don't try to get them because they're mine and they're not good for you right now, but I've revealed everything that is good for you. That's the Christian worldview whenever it comes to this kind of stuff. But all of this, remote viewing, that's another one of these things that have gone on. It's still going on. People, you can go to institutes right now and learn how to do remote viewing. And it's weird stuff. Something's going on. Something is going on. But here's the deal. Here's the key idea. The boundaries of acceptable truth are shifting. And I think it's a good thing, but I think you got to be prepared. And I feel sorry for people who were born into this because they didn't really see the stability, but also they're probably better off being born in this and having people like us, those of us who are Christians, come and help them out to share what the gospel is and how stabilizing the gospel is. Not everything is true, but confidence in those who told us what is false is fading. We are losing our confidence in institutions, in governments, in science. Not science as the method, but scientific community as a group of people who claim to have used this method and come to it. It's kind of like saying we're not losing faith in math, but the mathematicians that are telling us the answers. Math itself can't be wrong by definition, just like science. Science is the same thing as math. They're just kind of the same thing put to different words. But we're not losing faith in science, but in the scientific method or the fact that either one of these are sufficient to answer all of life's questions. They never were. When confidence fades, people look for someone else, somewhere else, and someone else to hang their truth hats on. Okay, now I just want to talk one more moment about science. Again, science isn't collapsing. Its interpreters are. That's a big difference. Science equals a method. People equals messengers. So just keep that in mind, okay? The problem isn't science. It's biased interpreters. It's false confidence as if we have all the data. It is scientism. Okay, that's the same thing I said again, but I guess I got a little ahead of myself just a minute ago. Why this matters. People don't live by methods. They live by meaning. And that is very, very true. We ultimately are people who are made up of meaning. Meaning is the deepest part of who we are. And this is what we've got to try to find. Not the methods, the meaning. Okay, cultural instability. Even in normal culture, we have this going on all over the place. This is the building cracking. This is the building falling. The science is just part of it. The UFOs are just part of it. But even at small levels, we're beginning to see that our confidence in the utopia that we were building through the Enlightenment, through the age of reason, through what that was supposed to produce. Not that things that we learned aren't good and don't advance us, but it doesn't end up answering all the questions. It doesn't take out the human factor. It doesn't take out the fact that people from the Christian worldview are sinners. And whenever you filter thing through a whenever you filter something through a person and you get that information from a person, even yourself, which you have to go through, it is going through sin. It is going through intentions. It is going through all of our own personal hopes and dreams, or our own personal ability to manipulate them to make them fit our hopes and dreams. And then it's being produced. So you've got every aspect of human civilization that is affected by this. Even golly, this was back in the 90s. Though some of you guys don't remember this, but or you think it just happened, but back in the 90s is the first time the food pyramid began to crack. And I think it was with the Atkins diet, if you remember that. That came out in the 1990s, and everybody was saying, don't eat carbs, eat just protein and vegetables. And people were like, you're crazy. The food pyramid, you know, which is the USDA food pyramid, taken from all the people we hire to tell us what to eat. They say you eat the most carbs. That's the best thing for you. And then we come to find out that they're being manipulated by the food companies and being paid by lobbyists and everything else. And then we're like, oh, great. You know, thanks a lot for setting us up for a climate of diabetes for everybody. But you also have so many issues. I don't know if this is even... everybody's like on the same page now. I hope they are. I'm sure they probably are. But whenever it comes to climate change and all the stuff that is with global warming and what that is caused from and where it's coming from, I just heard last night on the news, whenever it came, even some Democrats were sitting there saying, I shouldn't have said Democrats. Even some people you wouldn't think were going to say this were sitting there saying, yes, because of all the changes that we have come to know within the climate change area, we are changing to this. But anyway, you've got that which people distrust. We have political distrust massively. I mean, both sides. The trust that you have in the media. I mean, compare the trust that people had in the media in the 80s and 90s, and I didn't think we trusted the media. You know, I was like, I don't think anybody really trusts the media, but we probably had a 60, 70% trust in the media whenever they said something, no matter what channel you turned on, it was going to be right. Now, I think the trust in media is down to 23%. 23. And so you have nobody trusting the media, nobody trusting either political party, nobody trusting any president that's up there. It's just everything is shifting. And it doesn't mean we don't like someone, doesn't like a political candidate, don't like our party. It just means that we don't trust them anymore because we've been burned too often. What was the breaking point? There's lots of breaking points. There's so many. I mean, you talk about the fall of modernism. You can go through to from the utopia that was supposed to have no hunger in the 17th, 18th century, and then all of a sudden tons of hunger still around today, to the world that was going to be without any war, and then you have World War I and World War II, to all the scientific discoveries and everything that has happened, and then you have, you know, our going to the moon, the shuttle blowing up, and then us kind of saying, well, I guess we're not going to do that anymore. No more advancement into space, and I guess that the utopia isn't involved there, although we started to go again recently, so that's exciting for a lot of people. But the primary thing that is broke, I would just say this is the straw that broke the camel's back, even though it's a big straw, and it might have been able to break the camel's back on its own. But this was the, I don't know what we're going to call it in history books, the COVID experiment, but all that happened during the time of COVID and the way we were manipulated by so many people that beforehand we still wanted to trust. Everybody wanted to trust that what was going on. This was the eye-opening revelation where we looked outside and we said, listen, we can't listen to any of these people anymore. Whoever's in charge, they're probably not telling the truth. They're probably hiding stuff. The only reason a lot of people trust Donald Trump today is because he is so different and he does speak differently. He doesn't sound like all the other politicians that we have followed for so long. Therefore, a lot of people look to him and say, hey, listen, if he's talking like that, saying these things, I may not like it, but at the same time, I'm just happy we've got somebody that's telling the truth. That's the way they think. But who knows? I mean, we just don't know. So what's the result of this? What do we believe? What do we trust? And what is reality? These are all the questions that we have to ask. These are all the very, very important. What do we believe in spite of all of this? What do we do? Is there any person or institution to trust anymore? And in the end, we don't even know whenever it comes down to it. We're so messed up. We get so screwed up. We get so dizzy intellectually that we say, at this point, I don't even know what reality is. I heard somebody say that the other day. Because of all this stuff, they listed off some of these things that I've been talking about and said by the time COVID hit, they don't even know what ends up. And I understand that. And I think we need to see this is the... this is the situation in life that we find ourselves. This is the culture milieu in which we are born into, and all of Christians need to understand whenever you go out there, especially in the third world, I mean, in the in countries like America and the Western nations. Whenever you see all of this that have been exposed to all of this stuff, everybody's confused and they're looking at you. And you know what they're saying? Whenever you first start to talk and you begin to tell them a story, you say, you know, I don't trust you. I'll listen to you, but I don't trust you. And if you begin to say you have the truth, you have the ultimate truth, your truth is to the exclusion of other people's truth, they'll pat you on the head and say, okay, nice. I'm glad you believe that. I'm glad you're still stable. But and I feel sorry for you because you think that, because if you only knew what I knew, then you wouldn't be so stable. That's the way people think. I'm not saying it's true at all, because I certainly think that I have the truth with Christianity. I'm not saying I have all the truth or I have all the answers even within Christianity, but I do believe whenever I bring people to Jesus, whenever I bring people to an understanding of their sin, I don't know what their individual sins are, but I sure do know that they are sinners and you cannot stand before God with your sin and you have to have Christ. That is the most basic that I know. Who is Christ and what did he do? The person and work of Christ. I will always present that to you, and I will defend that within any worldview. I will destroy any worldview. I will knock down any walls that are keeping me from being able to take Christ and give him to you, because he is Christianity. What he did, who he is and what he did is Christianity. And that has implications for you. Everything else, I don't know about. A lot of the stuff we're talking about today, I don't know. I don't really know what's going on. I do believe there are secret things, and I always have believed that. And the Christian worldview would have taught us all, if we had listened, that there are secret things. There are some things that God says hands off of, and there are some things that he says, no, this is good. There's some things that he says, do not eat. And some other things he says, most of the things in the garden, he said, you can eat. Just this one tree you can't. There's very few things that you guys aren't going to know. And you're going to always, if God is infinite and we are finite, that means we have an infinite amount, if you can even call it amount, an infinite way to go before we can say we are close to him, but we'll still be an infinite way off. I mean, there's no way. Well, the point is, though, we'll always be an infinite away from having all the knowledge, but it doesn't mean we're not going to keep on learning, and we won't keep on growing in our understanding. As a matter of fact, I tell people this often, and I think this is true. I don't see how any way this cannot be true, that even whenever we get to heaven as Christians, when we get to the new earth, we will be learning for all eternity. We will be discovering for all eternity. We are not going to have a hard drive handed to us that we put in our brain and we all have the same hard drive and then we all have the same information. We'll still all be gifted in different ways. That is not part of the fall. The fall didn't happen and then he made everybody different. And the fall did not happen and he didn't make it to where everybody has their purpose that contributes to the whole. No, that's going to go on for all eternity. That's part of the good. So I can say that I believe very strongly that for all eternity, we're going to be learning like this. And so whatever frustration you feel about not knowing everything, get used to it. That's part of being human. But it's great that we're learning and we'll be learning in and with God for all eternity. And I can't wait to learn more. I love all these discoveries. I love that they fit into the Christian worldview perfectly. I love that I have the exact same message. Who is Christ and what did he do for you? And have you trusted in him because of your sins? I love that I have that message no matter what, and that will not change. So what do we have? What are people building instead of this worldview that I'm talking about here? Well, they're building playlists. They're building things to watch. And I can probably tell you what your worldview is, just like I could, if I didn't know me, I could come in and look at my playlist. What have I watched on YouTube and say, oh, this guy's this way. I can tell you what your worldview is based upon that. That may be the greatest evangelism tool that we can have right now is let me see your playlist before I talk to you so I know where you're coming from. So why this current method for most people is not only going to fail, but it is failing. I want to talk about that. This is very, very important. And everything I've said so far gets to this, at least for today. And it's at least what I want to talk about now. Because as we've moved along, I can tell there's no way I'm going to get to, I haven't even gotten to my main topic yet. Thank you. Okay, so let's talk about the 8 worldview questions. These are 8 questions that any belief, any thought, any worldview must assume. Anytime you're learning something, it has to square with these 8 worldview questions. And if it doesn't square with it, it cannot be right. But if it does, doesn't necessarily mean it's right. It means it's qualified to be right. Okay. Usually it will mean it's right, but at the same time, there's some exceptions. So let's talk about the 8 worldview questions. This isn't anything new. I could square these 8 questions with what Aristotle introduced, what Thomas Aquinas introduced, what has been thought for the last 4,000 years, really in every culture in one way or another. Whenever you're coming to know truth, you have to have all of these different areas covered in order for it to qualify. So the first question is, what is ultimate reality? These are the 8 worldview questions. What is ultimate reality? This has to do with ontology. Anytime you're talking about a worldview, you have to deal with the ultimate substance of reality. Whenever everything is boiled away, what is behind it all? What is the reality behind it all? Now, Christians, of course, would call this theology, but at the same time, if you want to be neutral at the starting point, you say, what is reality? What is the reality that began it all? Whether they began it all from themselves or out of themselves or created it ex nihilo, out of nothing. What is the power? What is the ultimate power behind it all? What is reality? Whatever you're thinking has to assume that question, the God question. Okay, that's what Christians would say. We'd say you cannot even start this whole process without this question answered, and then it's going to affect everything else. Because once you say, let's just go with this question, is there a God or is there not a God? And if there is a God, is he personal or is he not personal? And I would say, if this was what it was about right now, I would say you cannot get away from the fact that there is a God and he is personal. And maybe we'll deal with that specific one later. But if you take my Trinitarianism class, you'll see why. There's all kinds of questions we get into with that. But either way, my point is, your worldview, whatever your thoughts are, have to assume this question. It has to be congruent with whatever your view of God or ultimate reality is. Without God, I guess it's just, it's either nothing or it's the same forever. It's eternity. It's time. Those are really the only answers that you can give. There is nothing, which then there would be nothing. Or time is everything, or there is a God. There is a personal God because, well, okay. Let's go on to the next question. What is the nature of the world? Metaphysics. So what is ultimate reality? And then the next question is, what is the nature of the world? The metaphysics of the world. And Aristotle was so good about presenting metaphysics in a very comprehensive way. And I think what he did with metaphysics was really good for us trying to create this worldview, but it wasn't in any sense creating the idea of metaphysics, because everybody's always wondered, what is stuff? What is the outside world? What is it made up of? What are the physics behind it all? What are the metaphysics behind it all? Ontology is really the stuff behind everything. Metaphysics is the nature of the world. And what then, number three is, what is a human being? This is called anthropology. So ontology, metaphysics, and anthropology. What is a human being? Is there any different value behind a human being? Now, as Christians, we'd say, well, the human being is uniquely created in God's image. And you can see that in the creation story at the very beginning, God presenting himself. He's presenting ultimate reality. In the beginning, God. And then he says God created everything, metaphysics. And then after we go through many days of creation, God stops and says, let us create man in our image. And so this is the only thing that God has created so far in this narrative that is created in his image. And so that is what we would say as Christians. What is a human being? We'd say that it is a unique creation of God that is in his image. It is a spirit. We are ultimately a soul, and that is what makes up the human being. And then we, of course, once we have the human being, we say, what happens after death? That is the fourth worldview question, which is eschatology. That's the fancy word meaning what happens at the end times. The eschaton is the end times, so eschatology is the study of the end times, or the last things. So whenever you ask, and this is a question everybody asks. It's not as if you have to be a Christian to wonder what happens after death. Everybody asks. I mean, you're very young, and you just even dealing with the concept of death, it's quite confusing. It really is. I mean, you think about it. I remember whenever my daughter Caitlin was young, and our first rabbit died. His name was Anselm. I remember that. I remember all of this because I taught it right afterwards. And so I had to listen to myself say this over and over again back whenever I was teaching over and over the theology program. But I do remember this. I remember I didn't know how to tell them that their bunny died. Caitlin was old enough to understand it. Kylie wasn't. Now, we only had two kids at that time. This was in 2003, somewhere right around there. And somebody had placed a bunny right on our front porch. And it was really sad because I came home and there's Caitlin's bunny. And I'm like, okay, I'm gonna hide this bunny and bury it. Maybe she'll just forget that she ever had a bunny. But I knew that wasn't going to work. And so I had to go and tell her. And I said, maybe it's a teaching moment. And I said, Caitlin, I am really sorry, but your bunny died. And that was the first time she's ever introduced that concept. She's like, what does that mean? What is that? Well, let me show you. And then I showed her the bunny, and she just stared at it for a long time. She's like, where'd it go? What happened to it? I don't understand. You know, why won't it move? And then you're asking these basic questions, these fundamental questions, these worldview questions at 3 years old. You can't help it because you're primed to do that. You can't get away from any of these questions. Everybody asks them, and everybody answers them to some degree. I'm not saying we all answer them sufficiently or well or in congruence with each other, but at the same time, we all answer them, and so we have to figure out what is death. And then whenever we ask, whenever the bunny died, she just kept on saying, where did it go? Where did it go? That's an eschatology question. She was asking a hard eschatology question, especially for a bunny, because I don't know where a bunny went. But anyway, the fifth question is, how do we know anything? This is probably the most important question of the bunch for today, okay? I know that the theological question is the most important question, but for today, in our current subject, in our current predicament, epistemology is the most important. And of course, you know, there's courses on epistemology. I've almost taught a course on epistemology in my introduction to theology class. My introduction to theology is basically 8 classes of epistemology with an introduction and really 9 classes of epistemology, because that's what we're doing. We're saying, how does a Christian know anything? How do we know? That's what epistemology is. How do we know? It's really the emphasis upon the word how. How do you know that? How do we know anything at all? That's the question. How can we be confident that what it is we believe, what it is we claim, the proposition that we are given, we know it to be true? And right now, I'm telling you this right here. I'm trying to give you an epistemology of how to know anything. You have to put all these questions together. Now, specific to epistemology, for anybody, are your sources. Where do you go to? Whenever somebody says something today, God, especially today with AI and with the internet and with deception out there, somebody comes and gives you, used to be able to get a video proof of something, and you say, how do you know that actually happened? Well, let me show you. And then you get a video of it, and you're like, okay, that's probably did happen, because I doubt anybody can fake that with CGI. Now it's not even, I don't know what you call it, just AI. I don't even know if CGI is a thing anymore. Maybe AI took it over, or maybe AI is very advanced CGI. I don't know enough about this stuff. But here's the deal. In the end, pretty soon here, we're not going to be able to tell what is real and what is not based upon a video. I think there'll be a sixth sense in us that knows lots of stuff for a while. But I think it'll get harder and harder and harder. Like right now, I can watch a video and within 5 minutes, I can tell you if it's AI or not, just because AI hasn't advanced enough yet. But once it does, I mean, I think there'll be personality things. Like right now, you probably know that this is an AI, and you could be asked the question. I could ask you the question, how do you know that I'm not AI right now? And you'd say, well, it's really in the way you talk, the excitement that you have, and the way you do run-on sentences sometimes, and how you're sometimes unclear, and you know, and I'd say, okay, that's probably a good evaluation. But that's the sixth sense that we'll have, and it'll be based upon us knowing somebody and knowing somebody well enough to compare them to the fate. So anyway, this is an epistemological question. How do you know? Whenever you talk about epistemology, there's all kinds of sources for epistemology. In the Christian worldview, I talk about 6 sources. I talk about whenever you know something, whenever you learn something, you have to tell me your sources. And my sources are the scripture, our church history, that's tradition. Scripture, tradition. Reason, rationality or reason. Those are the big 3. Scripture's the most important, and there's a reason why Christians come to that conclusion that Scripture is the most important. But that's why many of us, well, if you're a Protestant, it's the reason why it's the most important. But if you're Catholic, both tradition and reason, I mean, excuse me, and Scripture are equal. but that's a different subject. But those big three, you got scripture, tradition, reason, then you got experience and emotions. And yes, Christians do believe in experience and emotions. We believe those are a source. We don't think those are the guiding source, but they're very, very important. They're what makes us three-dimensional and colorful. Otherwise, we'd be flat and black and white without experience and tradition. And then finally, we have another source that's a data source, which is creation itself. So Scripture gives us what's called special revelation, stuff we can't get from the outside world. Everybody can get general revelation. That's why it's called general. You don't have to believe in the Scriptures. You don't have to be a Christian to get general revelation. That's why we all have so much in common. That's why I can talk to you right now. Even if I assume you're not a Christian, I know I can believe that you understand me. I'm not going to believe that you accept what I'm saying, but at least you can understand it because you've got, in general revelation, you've got mathematics, the law of non-contradiction, law of non-contradiction would be in rationality, but rationality is a general revelation. But you got nature and creation itself speaking to us, giving us another data source of information. I can look at creation and say how big creation is and begin to understand more deeply what it means that God is all powerful and what he had to do to be able to create this. I can look at how small our planet is in comparison to the universe, and I just get blown away. But my next thought always is, God, I cannot believe you did this. I cannot believe you're that powerful. And it's almost like God's artwork to us. He just says, oh yeah, look at what I've done. Look at what I've done in this. I did it in a snap of a finger. I just said the stars also. He created the stars also. That's the only words I gave for it because it wasn't that big of a deal to me. I snapped my fingers and made it. And I'm like, how can you be so powerful? It's an illustration of his power. Anyway, these are all the different sources. So I gave you six. Scripture, tradition, reason, the big three. And then you have experience and emotions and nature. I should have said nature, because general revelation is a broader category. But nature, it is what the creation tells us, from the expanse of space to the intricacies of a cell that we keep on learning more and more about. Just amazing. Or just reality itself, the metaphysics that's going on behind the scenes. Then number six, the worldview question. Are there morals? Are there morals? So wait, let me go back. We've got number one, ontology. What is ultimate reality? We got number two, metaphysics. What is the nature of the world? We got number three, anthropology. What is a human being? Number four, eschatology. What happens after death? Number five, epistemology. How do we know anything? And then number six is ethics. Are there morals? Is there right and wrong? And how do we know that? How do we know is epistemology, but is there even such a thing as morals? Is there a right and a wrong to life? Is there, whenever I believe something and I'm right about it or I'm wrong about it, does it even matter? These are all moral questions. Is there good and is there bad? Is there things that are wholesome and things that are not wholesome? Are there morals will be ultimately answered by all these other questions in congruence with this. Because whenever you're talking about are there morals, you say, well, yes, because I can tell, my deep inner self tells there's a difference between good and bad. And I can only define good if I can define God, because there's no such thing as a measurement for good outside of God. It's just all relative. Okay, and then number seven is teleology. You may not have ever heard that one before. Maybe you've heard it in the teleological argument for the existence of God, or the telos. Sometimes people talk about the telos. But teleology is the study of our ultimate ends or our purpose. What are we created for? Is there a reason why you have been made? Is there an ultimate end? Is everything in the universe heading towards something? And what is that something? Is it designed towards something? And what is that something? So it's less about just what happens after death, but a element of that that says, what are we headed towards? What are we made for? What is the purpose of whatever it is we're talking about? Whenever I look at this microphone, so you might say, what's the teleology of this microphone? I'd say, so I can speak to people all over the world. What's the teleology of this light? So that you can see me while I'm talking. What's the teleology of the phone? So I can talk to people so that I can waste my life. You know, that may be the case. But teleology is the purpose of things. Okay, number 8, does it actually work? This is so important. This is so very important. This is the pragmatics of whatever it is we're talking about. This has a lot to do with the science. How does it work? What makes it work? Does it actually work? So whenever you put all these things together and you have a worldview, and then in the end, it's just, you know, you get on the bicycle and start to ride and it falls apart. You're just like, I don't care how well I made all these individual parts. It does not work. So it's no good. You throw it away. Sometimes we just start with our pragmatics and say, does it work? Okay, I don't care about anything else. Got to be careful there, because it doesn't mean it's working toward the right end. It doesn't mean it's working in the right way. It doesn't mean you have the right morals, reasons for writing it. So there's all kinds of things that goes into it. But in the end, it does have to work. Your worldview has to work. It has to pass a scientific test of just working. And then if it works and it passes all of these others, then at least it's qualified to be true. And I think you could be more certain, of course. Some of these, you're beyond testing. But, of course, whenever they all work together, then I think you can be assured that what it is you've been handed is true. So those are the 8 worldview questions. And I think it's very important today for us to know these 8 worldview questions. Again, ontology, ultimate reality, metaphysics, nature of the world, or let's just go with the questions themselves. What is ultimate reality? What is the nature of the world? What is a human being? What happens after death? How do we know anything at all? Are there real morals? What is our purpose? And does it actually work? Whatever it is that you see today, whatever it is you hear, you've got to put it through this structure, this machine. And I think you, if you look at all these questions, you can understand how they all work together and why. Whenever one of them whenever your worldview cannot sustain one of these, your whole worldview has to shift somehow. It's a Rubik's Cube that you have to get all the sides right, and they all have to be all right. In order for it to work. But once you get it right, you got it right. The problem is most of us don't have such a systematic worldview anymore. We don't have a systematic theology that we have seen. We have worked through from beginning to end, asked all the right questions, put it all together. We're working on things from an individual basis, from podcast to podcast. That is just what you're interested in at the time. And that's not the way to learn. That is going to be the way of learning going forward. And I hope our schools keep a more systematic whole, take people through a worldview, take people through philosophy, take people through systematic theology, Christian schools or Christian homeschoolers. But today we are learning in such a different way than we ever have in the history of the world. And I do fear for what we have going forward, but I also am very excited because there's new opportunities, there's new hopes, there's new open doors. People are thinking differently than they've ever thought. They are open to everything because they are confused about everything. And so whenever you're a Christian and you bring them the truth of Christ, they may accept it really quickly or just add it to the smorgasbord that is out there right now. We'll continue this later on, but once again, the most important thing is this: Christ and Him crucified. Keep that in mind, because I know we can get lost in so many other things, and it may seem confusing. It's not that confusing. Christ said, "Who do you say that I am?" That is the most important question. He said in Matthew chapter 7 that the road is broad that leads to destruction, and few are those that find it. That scares me. It does. It scares me. Not for myself so much, but because there's people I love that are on that broad road, and I want to get them off that broad road. Then the only door into the narrow gate that Christ talks about is Christ Himself. And in order to get through that door, you have to recognize your own need for Him. You have to recognize that you are a sinner. You have to come and fall on your face before Him and say, "Have mercy on me, the sinner." He will always forgive you. He will always have mercy on you without exception. But that's a hard thing for a lot of us to do. It's a very, very hard thing to do, to really understand that you're a sinner, to understand that you're helpless and hopeless. And that's why so many people go to these other podcasts and go to these other sources, because they want to find somebody that has hope, but they don't want to admit their sinfulness. They don't want to see who Christ is. They don't want to bow down before Him. They have pride in themselves. We all have so much pride, and pride is the first and the original sin. But whenever you come to Him, whenever you come to that narrow gate, unless you want to stay on the broad gate and go to destruction, that's what Christ calls it, destruction. You can call it hell, you can call it Gehenna, you can call it annihilation, I don't care. No matter what, it's destruction, and it's not good. It's not presented as a good thing by Christ at all. And He says you will be better off not being born than to go down that road. But that's why He came. That's why He went through so much, because that was the only way, in His love, it was the only way to save those that He loves. It's the only way to provide the door, to create the door that is different than the door we created. We created the door to destruction, and we go down it happily. But He comes and creates a new door and says, "Please come take this door. For God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son, that whoever believes in Him can go through that door." And it's called Jesus. Okay, guys, we'll continue this because I've got a lot more to say. I never even got to my topic of discussion. And I'm not going to tell you what the topic of discussion is, because if I told you, then you'd be mad that I didn't keep on going. But let's stop right there for today. We'll see you. One more thing real quick. I just thought of this after I got done. And I wanted to say this, and I should have said something about this. Whenever you're talking about uncurated, or there's no gatekeeper for the truths that we find, it's all our individual selves. It is more our individual selves. But let me tell you, there is a gatekeeper, and there is still someone kind of moving the wheels, and that has to do with the algorithms. And the algorithms will filter out, and I think they filter out and usually will push people toward the better ones, because the better ones will be the more watched, that make the more money. But I don't want to imply that there's not people that can adjust things and people that do adjust things and have you see what they want you to see. They do, very much. It's just in a whole different way. So make sure you add that to my thoughts on this, because it is important whenever you are finding things. Sometimes the best stuff may get buried, and that's why you may not even be able to watch this thing.
Theology